Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. If you like, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can also donate to the podcast by going to CanadaEHX.com and clicking donate, or you can go to buymeacupofcoffee/CraigU. All of these links are also in my show notes. And for people who donate, I have various levels of benefits. For $5, you get a thank you at the start of the next episode of Canadian History X, Canada's Great War, and from John to Justin, and on social media. For $10, you get everything from the $5, plus this episode is sponsored by with your name at the start. Also, I'll state it's sponsored by you on social media. For $20, everything from the $5 and $10, plus a second episode sponsored by you and promotion of something you're working on. And for $50, everything from the $5, $10, and $20 plus, you get to choose a topic for me to cover on Canadian History X. If you like, you can email me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Craig Baird, CraigBaird, and I'm on Instagram and TikTok, where I put up daily videos about Canada's history. Just go to my username, Bairdo37. And you can find weekly videos on Canada's history on my YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/c/CanadianHistoryX. If you want to find transcripts of every episode I've ever done, you can go to my website, CanadaEHX.com. And there's over 700 posts on Canada's history there. The area of Prescott has been for centuries the homeland of various Indigenous groups. The primary Indigenous group found there were the Haudenosaunee, and the area was also home to the St. Lawrence Iroquois. It was these groups that would first meet explorers who came through, followed by the fur traders, and eventually, settlers. The French would begin to occupy the area in the late 17th century, where they built a supply depot and an outpost called La Galette. This fort was built in the 1670s. In 1749, Fort de la Présentation was built on the other side of the river. The fort was soon abandoned in favor of Fort Levi, which was located in the center of the river. The area would become the site of an important battle in 1760 during the French and Indian War. Known as the Battle of a Thousand Islands, it consisted of 1,000 British troops and Iroquois warriors that attacked Fort Levi. At the fort, there was a force of 300 French soldiers who attempted to withstand the artillery bombardment by the British. The British would be held from capturing the fort for a week, during which two British warships were sunk and a third was crippled. In the end, though, the British took the fort, killing, capturing, or wounding all of the French troops. Upon capturing the fort, they changed its name to Fort William Augustus. This was soon abandoned for Fort de la Présentation, which was then named Fort Adwagachi. Fort Levi would fall into ruin over time and would eventually be submerged underwater in the 1950s during the construction of the St. Lawrence Seaway. During the American Revolution, British settlement would begin to occur when United Empire Loyalists, led by Edward Jessup, came to the region. In 1796, when the Jay Treaty was signed, the British left Fort Adwagachi, as the land was now part of the United States. In 1810, Jessup and his son would lay out a new town site, and they would name it Prescott, in honor of General Robert Prescott, who was then the Governor-in-Chief of Upper and Lower Canada. He had also been the aide-de-camp who delivered the news of the capture of Fort Levi a half-century previous. Sadly, Jessup would not see the town thrive as he passed away in 1816 at the age of 81. The first thing that was built in the new community was a log schoolhouse, with the teacher's home made of stone. For the next couple years, the community would slowly grow, but once again war would rear its head for Prescott and the surrounding area. The outbreak of the War of 1812 would have a lasting impact on the area. It was during this time that Fort Wellington was built. Built by the British Army from 1813 to 1814, the purpose of the fort was to protect the Gallup Rapids and the St. Lawrence River from the Americans. Built with earthen ramparts, the fort included a 24-pounder iron cannon on the southeast and southwest corners of the ramparts. The cannons were also powerful enough to fire over the river into New York State if needed, and could therefore stop any boat or ship that was passing through. Various smaller guns were also installed at the rampart walls. Despite being built in a critical spot on the landscape, the fort was never directly attacked. The fort would still play a role in the war, though. On February 22, 1813, Lieutenant Colonel George MacDonald led 500 men in a drill exercise on the St. Lawrence River, which was frozen at the time. The troops then went across the river and attacked the military barracks of the Americans and four ships frozen in ice, then returned to the fort with stolen food, ammunition, and several prisoners. When General Wilkinson with the Americans went down the river in November 1813 to capture Montreal, the fort's guns worried him enough that he unloaded his army upriver and marched them through the town while the boat slipped by without any passengers. After the war was over, the fort was soon abandoned by the British as it was no longer needed. It would sit mostly empty for the next 20 years until the Upper Canada Rebellion, when it was repaired and reactivated. The fort at this point served as a supply base for the government forces in the area. In 1838, a group of hunter patriots attempted to land at Prescott and use Fort Wellington in an attempt to invade Upper Canada. The town militia was able to repel them, though. The British would finally leave Fort Wellington in 1863, and the Canadian militia took it over. During the First World War, the fort was used as a depot for military personnel, since Prescott was the terminus for the Canadian Pacific Railway. Many of the soldiers who would find themselves in the trenches of Europe would pass through the fort at this time. On January 30, 1920, the fort was made a National Historic Site of Canada, and in 1923 it was transferred from the Ministry of Militia to what is now Parks Canada. In 1832, the Windmill Tower was constructed at Windmill Point. The piece of land it was built on overlooks the St. Lawrence River and the old King's Highway. The tower stands at a height of 62 feet and was constructed of random coarse stone and then crowned with a cast iron lantern. Initially, it was built as one of the few wind-powered mills in Canada at the time. The tower played a role in the Lower Canada Rebellion in 1838, where it was the scene of a battle fought between the Canadian militia and the Hunter Patriots I just talked about. At this point, milling operations of the tower ceased for good. For several years, with the worry of more invasions, the windmill was occupied by British troops. In 1872, the windmill was converted into a lighthouse as the St. Lawrence was being used more and more for commercial traffic. The tower continues to stand to this day, and due to its historic nature, it was made a National Historic Site of Canada in 1923. In 1834, Prescott was incorporated into a community, and it was placed under the management of a board of police. By 1847, the community would have a town council with Major B. White serving as the first mayor. In 1840, a baby named James Morris Walsh was born in Prescott. At the age of 34, he would become one of the original officers of the Northwest Mounted Police. 1 year later, he was a superintendent and assigned to a post in the Cypress Hills of current Saskatchewan. Naming the fort Fort Walsh after himself, the fort was located near the site of the Cypress Hills massacre that had happened 2 years previous. Walsh was put in charge of stopping the illegal American whiskey trade. In 1876, Sitting Bull and 5,000 Sioux crossed into Canada for refuge after the Battle of Little Bighorn, settling near the fort. Walsh would grow to respect Sitting Bull and have a strong friendship with him that kept the peace in the area. Known in the United States as Sitting Bull's boss, the Canadian government decided that the friendship of Walsh and Sitting Bull was preventing Sitting Bull from returning to the United States. As a result, Walsh was transferred to Fort Qu'Appelle, and he soon took health leave and resigned his commission 3 years later.
Commissioner McLeod, where are the rest of your men?
You've got more men back there than I have in the whole of Western Canada.
Yeah, but Sitting Bull held a war dance last night.
General Terry, in Canada, Sitting Bull has kept the Queen's peace. He's agreed to meet with you.
And Spotted Eagle. That face doesn't look ready to come back to the States without a fight.
President Hayes says you will be received kindly and...
The grandmother's medicine house is no place for lies. Not two more words. This country does not belong to you. We will stay here and keep the grandmother's peace. She will let us raise our children. We do not want lies. These men, Walsh, McLeod, they're the first white men who never lied to us.
I didn't know then that they'd be starved out of Canada and go back to the States. Walsh would resign over it, and Sitting Bull would be murdered.
In 1897, when the Klondike Gold Rush was at its height, Walsh was made the Commissioner of the Yukon Territory. He held the post until he resigned in 1899, and he would pass away in 1905 in Brockville, Ontario. Mount Walsh in the Yukon is named for him. In 1850, one of the most important corporations in the history of Prescott was started. It was the Bytown and Prescott Railway, which ran the first train from Prescott to Bytown, later to be called Ottawa, on December 25, 1854. This railroad, which ran for 84 kilometers, provided Ottawa with its first rail access to outside markets. Before long, ship lumber began to be shipped out of Ottawa, and the community grew quickly and would become the capital of Canada. Building the railroad was no easy task, since the land between Bytown and Prescott was mostly swampland. Crews had to wait until the ground froze so they could select the route, and on October 9, 1851, ground was broken with great fanfare and a parade. The process to build the railroad was not quick, and it would not be until 1854 that the route was prepared with the rivers and streams bridged by wooden trestles. Oddly, the Grand Trunk Telegraph Company began to run telegraph poles along the route, only for the railway to send men out to cut them down, stating the telegraph company did not have permission. On April 24, 1854, the laying of rails began from Prescott, and by May, main lines were being run. The first locomotive would run on the line from Augsburg on May 9, 1854, and on June 21, 1854, the first official passengers traveled from Prescott to Spencerville. As for the date when the train first arrived in Bytown, that's not quite known. I did mention that it was around Christmas 1854, but it may have been as late as April 1855. One very interesting aspect of this early train line was that the rail lines were made of wood. Miles Pennington, a railway agent who took the line as one of the first people to ride it, would state, quote, "I freely confess that I was mighty glad when we got through in safety without paying a sudden visit in the backwoods," end quote. Prior to this, the same distance took an entire day for a stagecoach to run along the wagon trail. Today, various sections of the line are still in use, but for the most part, the line and its rails were ripped up in the mid-1960s, as rail travel was replaced by vehicle travel on the expanding highways of the country. In 2004, a plaque was erected in Prescott to celebrate the railroad and its impact on the area. It reads in part, quote, "In 1851, Walter Shanley, chief engineer, started construction, and a train first ran from Prescott to Bytown on Christmas Day, 1854. The railway, renamed the Ottawa and Prescott in 1855, was the first to serve the nation's future capital, giving it access at Prescott to the St. Lawrence River and the Grand Trunk Railway. In 1867, it became the St. Lawrence and Ottawa Railway, and in 1884 was leased to the Canadian Pacific Railway for 999 years. End quote. In 1855, the Prescott Railway Station was built to accommodate the traffic on the new railroad. The station was not a large station, but the amazing thing is that this station continues to stand to this day. Due to its historic nature, the building was made a National Historic Site in 1973, and a visit to Prescott definitely should include a stop at this train station that is older than Canada itself. In 1928, Prescott became one of the most important communities in Ontario when it was announced that the community would be home to the location of a major terminal in eastern Canada. The Ottawa Citizen reported, quote, "Announcement in the House of Commons that the location of a terminal for transport to the Great Lakes, the big prize for which several Canadian inland ports have striven for the past 5 years, has gone to the thriving and aggressive town of Prescott, set the border center humming with excitement and lighted a new enthusiasm among all circles of the population," end quote. The project would cost $4 million, about $65 million today. And the work to bring the project to the community had taken 6 years through the hard work of community leaders. The Ottawa Citizen would write, quote, "Prescott stands today on the threshold of a splendid future. The moment finds a historic town ready to assume her new duties and responsibilities." Ottawa Mayor Arthur Ellis would state, quote, "Ottawa and Prescott are close and excellent neighbors, and we are always glad when good fortune befalls any of our localities. We are all linked together now, thanks to the universal use of the motor car and other means of rapid transportation," end quote. On August 2, 1931, a man named Leo Bovin was born in Prescott. He would play on the river ice and outdoor rinks of the area, honing his skill. In 1948-49, he began to play junior hockey, where he was scouted by the Boston Bruins and signed to the team. He wouldn't play long for the team before he was traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs in 1950. He made his NHL debut with the Toronto Maple Leafs on March 8, 1952, playing only one game. In 1954-55, he was traded back to the Boston Bruins, where he would have his best years. He was named captain of the team in 1963, but was traded to Detroit in 1966. He would continue to have success in Detroit, and as he began to age, he thought of retiring, but in 1967, he was picked up by the expansion Pittsburgh Penguins. He would play a season and a half with Pittsburgh and then go to the Minnesota North Stars, where he finished his career. Over the course of his NHL career, he played 1,150 games, recording 322 points. In 1986, he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. On January 7, 1941, a new ship was launched for the Canadian Navy bearing the name of the HMCS Prescott. Named for the community, it would spend the Second World War serving as a convoy escort during the Battle of the Atlantic. On March 13, 1943, while escorting a convoy, the Prescott encountered and sunk the German submarine U-163. The submarine had sunk four ships of the Allies before it was sunk by the Prescott. All 57 men on the submarine lost their lives. After the war was over, the Prescott was paid off on July 20, 1945, and then sold for scrap on August 30, 1946. It would be broken up in 1951 at Hamilton. In 1949, Prescott celebrated its 100th anniversary with a massive celebration. A grand parade was held that included a 1901 model Ford, a goat-drawn cart, dozens of floats, and much more. Major General W.H. Macklin would lay a wreath at the war memorial near the town hall, and he was also presented with the key to the town. Also on hand was Tommy White, the 78-year-old son of Major Bartholomew White, the first mayor of the community. On September 28, 1984, Prescott got a very special visitor when Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip toured the community as 2,000 people greeted them. In Prescott, the Queen viewed a military pageant at Fort Wellington, and Prescott Mayor Sandra Lawn stated, quote, "In a world that often seems preoccupied with the reality of human frailty, there is yearnings for true friendship, trust, peace, and safe neighborhood. This atmosphere still exists in small-town Ontario and must be preserved." End quote. If you visit Prescott, a great time to visit is during the St. Lawrence Shakespeare Festival. The festival, which was founded in 2003, runs from mid-July to mid-August and features not only plays by William Shakespeare, but many other playwrights as well. Plays are performed outdoors with the St. Lawrence as a backdrop that makes for a very unique theater experience. And this unique setting has allowed the festival to see its attendance rise by 600% in the last 12 years alone. I hope you enjoyed that episode of my look at Prescott, Ontario. If you did, please leave a rating and review. If you like, you can email me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Craig Baird, CraigBaird, and I'm on Instagram at Bairdo37. As well, again, if you want to support the podcast, you can for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. And you can donate to the podcast by going to CanadaEHX.com and clicking Donate. I'd also like to thank all of my wonderful patrons, and I apologize if I get any names incorrect. Keelan Pregnitz, Michael Matthews, Joanna Parker, Jeff Dahl, Vobs, Robert Page, Richard D., Colin Johnson, Jeff Hershey, Kyle Murray, Steve Paikin, Matthew Garthau, Lionel Romaine, Dr. Bob Turner, an anonymous patron that I truly do appreciate, Randy Hayden, Doug Campbell, Reg W., Deborah Carlson, Francis Helbling, Nick Zinri, Shannon Marshall, Clinton Martinez, Dimitri Chauve, Aaron O'Hara Myers, Robert Dunseith, Todd Casey, Catherine Rawa, Luke S., J.P. Bear, Jason Hall, Phil Maynard, and Iris Gray. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.